Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fortress Comic News, episode 316. I'm one of your hosts, Chris, alongside my co-host here, Mike. What's going on today, Mike?
Nothing, man. Just chilling, enjoying the beautiful weather.
Yeah, I got on my bike yesterday. It was nice.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Good biking weather. I don't have a bike, but if I did, I would be biking.
I realized really quickly that it's been over a year since I've been on a bicycle, and I'm way out of shape.
Yeah, I know that when I get on the bike, the first time I use one, I'll like that the next day, my legs will probably be jello.
What's worse about it? So this is fun for everybody out there that, you know, maybe goes down the same path. Hopefully goes on the same path I did over the last year. I decided to go on a bike ride, went for like 45 minutes, and where I live, it's all hills. So, You know, up and down, all that. My legs were fucking jello. And then I decided to immediately go into my kettlebell routine, which involved a lot of core and leg exercises.
Yep.
And afterwards, I just fell on the mat and just laid there for a minute. I'm like, oh, this is too much.
I can't move. Yeah, that's great advice. So try that out. That's the Chris workout, everybody.
See, my advice is get a gym membership and go on a bike there during the winter if you deal with winter like I do.
Oh, yeah, true.
You know, that's what I'm doing next year, I'm telling you.
That's like what I did during the pandemic. Everybody bought one of those exercise bikes, and so did I.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the pandemic ended, it sits in my closet, and I never use it. So if you visit and you want an exercise bike, I got one.
When I get a house, that's what I want to do. I want to get one of those exercise bikes because I don't really like going to the gym.
Yeah, not a fan.
I don't like being around people when I'm working out. I don't like being around people, period. Sorry, everybody.
No. Understood. Well, I mean, we read comics. Come on. People can relate.
But yeah, so I'm going to try it. I want to buy one of them down the line, but I don't want to move it all the time, which is my current... Well,
yeah.
I mean, I've been stable for the past year plus now, but for a while there, my life was like, hey, we move into a place, we get settled. You got to move.
Yep. The more heavier shit you buy, the more heavier shit you have to carry to those point A to point B.
Yeah, and I already got enough comics. And I've already done all the favors to move comics because my best friend in the entire world, the man who I will take a bullet for, came over to help me move out of our house that me and my ex lived in years ago.
He's not talking about me, everybody. I want you to, he's like, isn't that Mike? No, he's not talking about me.
I'm sorry, Mike, but it's okay. I've known this man since we were little kids.
Yeah.
But he helped me move all of my comics out of the third story of this house.
Oh, yeah.
And afterwards looked me in the eyes and said, never again.
that's funny. I have the same story of when Katie and I started dating. That was like one of the first things I had her do. And she still brings it up all the time. One was like, help me dust off my pop figures. There was a lot of pop figures when I moved. And I think I have a picture of that endeavor. And then the second was I was living on the, you remember my apartment in Massachusetts, really small, but it was up like three flights of stairs and crazy corner. And then I had like all six of my boxes to bring down, comic boxes. And and she told me the same thing. You get about one move out of those people in your life that are very close to you when it involves comics, and then you got to move on to somebody else because she also said never again.
Not to flex because Mike went digital like a smart man.
Yeah.
But I have many, many more boxes than six.
Yeah. I think I have like, I can't remember. I'll count up the boxes after this and we'll, yeah, you definitely have way more than I do for sure because you haven't stopped. But
no, Mike. So listen, if ever a day comes where a woman can stand me long enough to marry me, you're in the wedding party, don't get me wrong.
Oh, like, okay.
This guy's good. The best man, so I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's all good. It's understood. Understood. That being said, everybody, speaking of how much we love people or dislike people, we do have a person on the show today. David Whalen's coming back. Correct Handed Comics, you know, The Offspring. He's been on the show. This will probably be his fourth time, I believe. David's a great guy. Awesome to talk to, so we'll be chatting with him in a little bit. We're very fortunate that people want to come back to the show because that means we're not as grumpy and curmudgeons as we thought.
Back to I'm having to turn people down.
Yeah. casual flex.
Yeah.
And we could turn down, I don't know if we could say this, but Chris has turned down a couple ad sponsors too, because we ain't got time for that, for what you dish it out.
Yeah. You don't want to hear behind the scenes podcasting bullshit, but no.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it anymore.
Now,
if go to Patreon at patreon.com/fortresscomics.
Yep. There you go. That's where you can go to. Now, if someone approached us and said, hey, we want to run ads and we'll give you guys Jeffrey dollars, I'd be like, hell yeah. But then all the Toys R Us's are closed, so.
Or if it was like, hey, you could quit your job money. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll do all your bullshit. Yeah, but that's not what's going down.
No. But yeah, Patreon is there. I guess we got a little bit of news. We got some stuff to talk about that we've done this weekend. So I knew you went and saw Guardians of the Galaxy. I did not, so we'll talk about that. And then there's some really exciting comic news this week that I cannot wait to talk about.
Didn't you do something fun over the week?
I did. So I had tickets from Christmas to go see a Star Wars symphony, and it's played by the Albany Symphony Orchestra. And it was a fantastic time. Of course, there was people dressed up and as stormtroopers and stuff like that. That was a lot of fun. But they played a handful of songs, and John Williams wasn't the conductor. I have seen John Williams before. He plays up in Tanglewood in Lenox, Massachusetts every year to do Star Wars music. So I'm very fortunate that I've seen John Williams live. But the conductor was great, talked about a lot of the movies and stuff in between playing the songs. And just like how much of a genius John Williams is, talked about like the musical structure and stuff like that. And the actual set list was picked by John Williams. And he said, this is the progression that he thinks, and these are the songs that he thinks should be played. One of them was the Cantina song. So that was awesome. But there were like pretty much every banger that, he didn't play Binary Sunset, but that's used, that tone or that tune is used a lot in other songs. So that wasn't so bad. And no Duel of Fates, was really upset about that. And I didn't realize, like, it sucks because the movie is so bad, but Episode 2, like the whole love between Anakin and Padme, I forget what the song is called. That like represents their love, but it was so great. Like I couldn't, like, just watching the string section and everybody just like shred. It was insane. So you have like a new appreciation for the music. Cause also like when the credits are rolling, you're not listening to the whole songs. I will say the best song was at the end of The Force Awakens, when Rey is like climbing the steps to meet Luke for the first time. At the end of the movie, that was probably one of the best songs, because then that, like, through the credits and everything, turns into a whole medley of all the songs from Force Awakens. So that was a great, epic, like 7 minutes of just nonstop music.
Quick interjection. I think the song you're thinking of is Across the Stars.
Across the Stars. Thanks. Yeah, but definitely the best song. It was the best, like, performance was the Force Awakens stuff, I think, personally. But yeah, it was a great time. Highly recommend seeing that music live.
Yeah, I did video production for a local theater, concert venue years ago, and did video for, and when I talk about video, it's like the video that you see when you're sitting on the lawn on the big screens.
Oh, cool.
And I did it for bands like Dropkick Murphys, Blondie, Judas Priest, like a ton of like awesome bands over the years.
That's cool.
One of the things we did every year was the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, Rochester, New York, did a show there, and they did the music of John Williams.
That's amazing.
So I got to do video production for them one year, and
damn,
that's not just Star Wars,
right?
There's a lot of Indiana Jones and other stuff.
Yeah, but that's sick, dude. That's awesome.
But yeah, so I know that stuff being performed live is actually really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, when I saw John Williams, the first half was Flight in Movies by a different composer than John. So they did like E.T., Star Wars, all the different movies that involve flying. Or not Star Wars, Superman. Because, he did the Superman theme. And then John Williams came out. It's really cool. I probably wouldn't go out to see like Beethoven or shit like that. But
the important shit like Star Wars.
Yeah. It was pretty cool that this conductor was just like gushing about John Williams. He's like the best contemporary artist of our time and all this shit. I was like, yeah, give the man his dues, you know?
100%.
All right, we'll jump into the news here, and then Chris is going to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy. So I want to hear about it because I want it spoiled for me. TV, Sweet Tooth has been renewed for a third and final season on Netflix. That's great because we haven't seen season two yet, but I'm sure
it's good. Season two out? When does it come out?
I don't know. Netflix sucks about this stuff.
Yeah, because I've been waiting to re-up my Netflix for that reason.
Fun fact, the guy who plays, what's his name? Abraham? Is that the big dude?
Mm-hmm.
He just popped up in an episode of Ted Lasso as one of the main characters' dads, and he comes from like a African country, so he's wearing this crazy almost like a dress kind of garb, and it's like just funny to see him like that because you see him in Sweet Tooth and he's like a badass.
Well, you know the kid in Sweet Tooth is in Cocaine Bear.
Really? The little kid?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I did not know that.
Yeah, that's like cool. Sweet Tooth, like the main character he's in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really funny. I watched it with my dad and I was like, that's Sweet Tooth. What the fuck?
That's awesome.
Sweet Tooth is already out, Mike, so we're apparently just lost in the weeds.
Holy shit.
It came out on my brother's birthday, April 27th. But
that's funny because I've been watching Netflix. I've been watching the reruns of Seinfeld, mm-hmm. and Sweet Tooth has not popped up on my... I swear to God, I would have seen it if it popped up.
That should be the front page. I don't understand that, but...
Yeah, that's weird.
That says to me that either enough people are watching it or is good enough that they're willing to like finish the story. So mm-hmm. I'm really happy about that. So I guess when we're done recording today, I'm going to re-up my Netflix and...
Yep.
Gonna start watching.
Yep. I gotta fly to the West Coast, so I'll probably just binge it when I do that.
There you
that's
go.
That's a good way to do that. Well, that's cool. Yeah. I mean, we don't want it to be dragged out forever, so. Movie news. Because of the Writers Guild strike, it looks like production has been shut down for now on Blade. Dude, this movie has to be cursed. I know we talk about The Flash being cursed. This movie is straight up cursed.
100%. It's unfortunate because I love Blade.
Yeah, same.
But it's unreal, man. Like the amount of stuff that's going wrong with this movie.
Yeah, they said there's some reports that Marvel has also set a time frame for early 2024 to begin production on the upcoming Fantastic Four movie. We know this writer strike is affecting everything in comics. We saw Tom King talk about how he was writing something amazing for DC, a movie I'm sure was related to Supergirl. Like, come on. And everything's halted productions, TV shows, movies, all that stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, and we won't get into the weeds with what's going on with the writer's strike, because that's not really our niche. But
I don't know enough about it.
Yeah, and I don't know enough about it either. At the end of the day, like, I'm kind of the mind, like, I hope everybody gets what they want. Like,
yeah, right.
You know, the people on the bottom, you know, like myself, I'm a grunt as well.
Mm-hmm.
Need to get paid, but I don't know. It's not something I like dive deep into. All I know is that there's people I respect that are like for it. So I'm like, okay, whatever. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yep.
But from a fan perspective, it really sucks that it's like affecting things that we are
exactly
looking forward to or enjoying or whatever. Right. But yeah, the Blade movie, man, I really want that movie to come out. Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
It seems like every day there's a new rumor of who's going to play who.
Which
so
sucks.
I'm really curious when we get that announcement, and I'm assuming San Diego, they're going to come out with a big thing.
I hope so. That would be awesome.
Yeah, especially if they're going to start like really production next year. So
yeah. And then in discussing Superman Legacy, everybody knows this is the James Gunn Superman movie at WB. The CEO David Zaslav discuss James Gunn's commitment to DC now that the final Marvel movie is released, which would be The Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Quote from David was, "We got James Gunn and Peter Safran working very hard on DC, which is going to be a very big growth driver for this company. We're very bullish on DC. The Superman script's first draft is done. Gunn is on a mission from God. It is really a good moment to prove out on DC what we got and how strong it is globally for long-term sustainable growth." So James Gunn really toeing the line between being a writer and keeping his job by turning in a rough draft. but yeah, I think we're all pretty excited to see what's going to come of this. I'm excited to see a casting. I know James Gunn keeps teasing that stuff. So, it's funny because like there's a lot that he can still do to move this movie along that doesn't involve writing. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm sure they have to do a lot of other stuff that can get done during the strike. So,
yeah, I'm excited to see a Chris Pratt as Superman too.
Oh God, no, please.
I know. I like this quote. I like what they were saying here. It shows a lot of faith into what these two are doing to like push DC Studios forward and to get like a really good cohesive DC cinematic universe running. So I have high hopes for James Gunn moving forward. We'll discuss in a minute, but those hopes have become even higher after Guardians 3. And yeah, I so want a good, take that back. I so want a great DC cinematic universe, because I've said it before and I'll say it again. The only way we ever get another Endgame moment is if DC gets their shit together.
Yep.
So here's to hoping.
Yeah, here's to hoping. And now we're going to have Chris talk about Guardians of the Galaxy. He can spoil as much as he wants, so that's just a disclaimer. If you don't want to hear spoilers for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, I would suggest, I don't know, skipping ahead.
Yeah, a little bit, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So the Star Wars, it's really good. It's really, really good.
Out of 10?
Like 9.
Okay, great.
Hands down the best of the new wave.
Okay, great.
I think both, in terms of the actual movie, just as a movie, is the best. And in terms of how much I enjoyed it, because I really enjoyed Ant-Man 3. I know a lot of people didn't. I found it fun, so it goes higher on my list. But I understand where as a movie, it's not as great. Putting those two things aside. But Guardians is phenomenal. It's a great send-off to these characters, or this team, really. Because we still were going full spoilers, so everybody was wrong. Nobody dies.
Okay. That's good.
Everybody's there. I love, although they change kind of the time and place of things, the Rocket origin is spot on. The villain I thought was going to be the Universal Church of Truth ended up being the High Evolutionary, which honestly I really, really like, because the High Evolutionary is a cool villain who creates, in the comics, he creates an Earth that's on the exact opposite side of the sun. Oh. So we never see it.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's identical to ours, but it's filled with like hybrid human animal things.
Oh, interesting.
He does something similar here, but they don't do the comic book science of it. They just put it out in the middle of the universe somewhere.
Okay.
And Rocket, who's not a creation of the High Evolutionary to my knowledge, I could be wrong on that in the comics, is a creation of the High Evolutionary in this, which makes sense because he's a link in the chain to get to what the High Evolutionary wants.
Yep.
And basically Rocket's like one of the only ones along the line that was able to independently think and become, have his own personality and everything. Mm-hmm. And that was something they were never able to achieve again. So that's, they want Rocket so they can dissect him and figure out what they did right that time. So Rocket's kind of the main focus of this movie. I love the callbacks to the holiday special. I love the team getting back together and how they all interact with each other. Drax is phenomenal again. The not only the High Evolutionary, but like all of his little chimeric creature things that he uses to fight him are great. I think the only disappointment for this, and I'll be fair because I had the same feeling with Taskmaster when they did him, is Adam Warlock was kind of a disappointment. But I do feel like this is a step in a direction for him to be something down the line.
Okay.
He kind of, so he's basically treated as a bumbling idiot throughout this, where he's like just got out of the cocoon. He's still a child, quote unquote, but with like these fantastic powers. And that's just not the Adam Warlock I enjoy. But they did get the powers right and all that. And I like his kind of, he starts off as a bad guy. He ascends to become a good guy at the end and all this. So that, while disappointing, I liked where he ends up. And there's a few other things. Like there's a moment where Groot at the end of the movie like actually speaks. And Gunn said, like, that wasn't really him speaking. That was the audience finally understanding him for the first time or something.
Mm-hmm.
It came across weird in the moment where I'm like, why is Groot speaking? Like, I don't know. Groot says, I'm Groot, and that's it.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah.
And then there's another moment where Rocket, like, embraces himself and says, I am Rocket Raccoon. I'm like, nope, Rocket always says, I'm not a raccoon. Like, these are little tiny things, but they bug me as a fan mm-hmm. of these characters. Like, this is not what these characters do.
Mm-hmm.
But I do get where Gunn's coming from and the story arc that he's trying to provide here. So all in all, that's like, I mean, you get the rest of the story. Good guys win in the end. Like,
right. Any after credit scenes or anything?
Two after credit scenes. One has Rocket leading a new Guardians of the Galaxy team, which includes Adam Warlock. And because at the end, the team disbands, I should say that too.
Okay.
Everybody kind of goes their own way. Peter goes back to Earth to meet his grandfather. Drax just wants to go and do his own thing, so on and so forth. So Guardians or Rocket starts a new Guardians team, which includes Adam Warlock. And then this little girl that we meet along the way too, who I'm pretty sure is Quasar. Mm-hmm. So that was awesome.
That's cool.
And so that's like the first end credit scene. Then the second one is like Peter sitting down with his grandfather eating cereal and mm-hmm. really nothing happens. But it's just a way for them to be like, show this little stupid scene, and then it just cuts to a white screen where letters pop up saying Star-Lord will return. So,
oh shit. Okay.
There's been rumors of whether or not Chris Pratt will come back. I've always thought they were kind of bullshit. This kind of proved to me that they were bullshit. I mean, Star-Lord will come back for an Avengers movie or something down the line.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all in all, I think it's well worth seeing. Especially if you haven't been into the newer Marvel stuff. I think this fits more into the pre-Endgame mm-hmm. Marvel.
Okay.
But yeah, I really, really enjoyed it.
Cool, man. I'm glad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. Maybe I'll try to go see it at the theater still. All right, everybody. We're going to hop over to this interview with Mr. David Whalen, and we'll see you all on the other side.
All right, everybody. We've got another very special guest, a returning special guest. Everybody, welcome to the show, Mr. David Whalen.
Hey,
welcome,
David. Hey, Mike, Chris, thanks for having me back on again. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah, love of course. You, man. Yeah, the one man band here, writing, illustrating, doing it all, publishing.
Playing all the instruments. All the instruments are tied to my knees and my elbows and my ears to be able to do it all.
I knew a guy who did that. Nice. But he had a drum set to pedals, so he would drum with his feet. Awesome. And then play guitar and sing.
Yes. Wow. This is basically what he's doing.
Yeah.
I'm still really impressed by those people. Come on. That's crazy.
That's phenomenal.
So a lot of complex variables to compute.
Yeah. but you definitely have a system down. I mean, you just have issue 24 out of The Offspring now mm-hmm. with correct-handed comics, sorry. And Chris has got volume one there.
Beauty.
Boom, everybody. Yeah. It exists. I can confirm.
There it is.
You got the omnibus out, so that's pretty crazy to say that you have an omnibus available of your own work. I mean, you want to talk about that? That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, season one, I'm trying to break up each storyline into seasons mm-hmm. just for my own sanity to know where I am in the story, you know, and issues 1 through 13 are collected in the omnibus, and I have volumes 1 through 5. Some of those volumes also have some backup one-shot stories into them. I try to make sure they are collected in each individual story. So some of the stories are only three issues long inside that first season. So if I have three issues of The Offspring with one story inside of it, I'll put a backup story of mm-hmm. one of our one-shots to be able to just show people other things that that we offer at Correct Handed Comics.
That's awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, the first 13 issues, and then that's like, that'll get you pretty much halfway there. You're not even halfway done at that point, you know. It's like you have so many more comics after that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So you said you got issue 25 coming out at the end of the month. We'll talk about that. So we're like, before we get there, where has the story gotten us so far? Like, where would you say we are? I mean, it's end of season 2 is coming, but like, Are the characters where you wanted them to be as far as like development and stuff like that?
Yeah, they very much are. I'm actually surprised that it worked out as well as it did. because I've had these characters for many, many years, since I was probably 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And when I started these characters, I knew that I wanted the growth to be growth, but not the problems 100% solved. Because these characters, when we first meet them in issue one, are in the worst possible places in their lives. One of the characters, Sarah, is getting out of prison. One of the main characters, Vince, has tried to commit suicide. And another main character, I try to handle each of their problems differently. So Vince is the jokester. He handles all of his problems with trying to make a joke and then run away. Sarah is the one that's very standoffish. She's the one that doesn't interact with people, that wants to, you know, would rather be alone than talk to anybody. And Will is the one that looks like he's got everything under control, looks like he's handling his problems well, but he's what I like to call the duck on the pond. On top of the water, it's smooth sailing. Underneath the water, it's just furious kicking and flipping and flapping all over the place. Mm-hmm. So as his storyline start to progress, you start to see the cracks in his character and his with his problems that he's been dealing with. Each one of these characters were abused mentally and physically growing up. They meet at a essentially an orphanage, an alternative school, where they realize that there's probably 40 kids in the school itself, but these three main characters realize that they all share some kind of weird powers, where they feel like they feel like they're drawn to each other, where they're linked, and they start to, as they reach puberty, start to develop these powers more. Each of their powers kind of spit out on them during a very very traumatic event in their mm-hmm. childhood. And as the first season goes, I really wanted to showcase not just each of the characters' individual personalities, but I also wanted to really make sure that the readers knew that each of these characters handled these things completely differently, and how they are growing not just individually, but together as a unit. Sometimes they don't want to grow as a unit. They try to not be a team or together. Team is a strong word. It's not really a superhero team, but you know mm-hmm. what I mean? A unit together. And as they start to develop this bond, this friendship, they start to their powers start to develop a little bit more as they go. So it's really been, for the first season, just really showcasing, first of all, the characters themselves, their powers, and the crazy bad guys that they have to, monsters. I try to say creatures, chaos, monsters, and mayhem mm-hmm. that they have to battle as they're going. And they realize that they're kind of a black hole for different kinds of monsters.
It's certainly come a long way from I know when we first talked to you, and it's probably, I think it's been a wild ride since then. I mean, yeah. The issue 24 you have up, you said, and issue 25 will be wrapping everything up for season two, right?
Yeah, season two has been fun. Set up these characters in a way that I really love different genres. That's one mm-hmm. of the reasons why I started the one-shot series, because I wanted to be able to kind of flex my writing muscles, you know, to be able to do different kind of stories. But The Offspring was really set up for me to have as much fun in different genres as I could. If season one was kind of like thriller, monsters, action, I'd say season two was kind of leaned a little bit more towards action sci-fi. Because season two starts with them searching for one of their long-lost friends, Megan. So three of them, Sarah, Vince, and Will, as season two progresses, becomes four, where their friend Megan, they realize that their friend Megan, who had been taken from them, is one of them who lived her life with very traumatic events that I showcase in issue 23. And then they meet, and then she ran away. So she kind of set herself up to fail by leaving this group that she, you know, knew that she had a connection with, but did not care, was mm-hmm. too scared to, you know, too worried about hurting other people because of the way her powers manifested, that she decided to run. So season two is really setting up not just searching for her, but also having a really developing an understanding of why the four of them connected. So the season two starts with a time travel story back to the American Civil War, where they're all separate. All four of them are separated out into different areas. One of Vince is a Confederate lieutenant. Mm-hmm. Sarah is a Southern belle on a Southern plantation. Will is a slave, mm-hmm. and Sarah is a runaway slave. So they've all started, you know, in this area, kind of muddled and not knowing where they are, or who they are in this new timeline. Mm-hmm. So it was really fun to be able to have them jump to a different time period, jump back, and still Sarah, Vince, and Will have to go on a road trip to be mm-hmm. able to find Sarah in their time right now.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, that's interesting. You yeah. play with the different timelines.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Season three actually is all time travel.
Nice.
It's starting a huge storyline. I set it up in the end of season two in issue 25, to where they've traveled through time. Issues 23, 24, 25, they travel back and forth through different timelines, through different time periods. And they end up kind of losing control over their jumps. And I set up the bad guy is creating a time machine and he's in total control. And then they, you know, through their actions, they lose control. He loses control of how he can jump through time. So, and it sets up the next story of getting to know a little bit more about why these four characters have these powers and why these four characters are so connected, not just to each other, but to the universe as a whole, which I've set up. You know, I make little comments about, we have little things, little hints about why they're so important to the universe as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And so with all this time travel, time jumping that you're doing, do you have like a favorite one that you got to do throughout or you're going to do in this story?
Yeah, I'm really excited because the end of this season, as they at the end of season three, as they start to time travel in the end of season two, they realize that they're going further back and further back and further back and further back. So by the end of season three, I never thought I'd actually be able to get to this point to be able to draw this. In season three, they're so far back that they're Cro-Magnon. They're not fully even human anymore. Mm-hmm. And I'm super excited. That's going to be like a really contained one issue contained storyline. But I'm really excited to draw it. I think I've got a pretty good, handle on where the characters are and how they're going to come back together in that issue. But I'm super excited for every single storyline. They're on the Lusitania at the beginning of season three. That's going to be issue 26 at the end of summer. They're going back, to the execution of John the Baptist. They, wow. One of them is going to be, I forgot the French, I should know her name right away. Joan of Arc.
Oh, Joan of Arc.
One of them is going to be Joan of Arc. So they're slowly moving further and further and further back into time. And there's a reason for it, mm-hmm. that I'm going to kind of explain as I move them backwards through time.
Okay.
Joan of Arc, the goth chick from Clone High.
That's it. Exactly.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
It's so when they travel back, you're kind of de-evolving them with it. Like, do they kind of like take on, are your time travel rules that they take on the form of what they would be in that time period?
They have been, and I set up in season one that they had been reincarnated through time. So every time they jump, they're jumping into who they were back in that time period. So, and I've kind of set it up to where as they continue to jump in time, they still remember all the other timelines. So as they jump further and further back into time, all these memories just keep getting flooded into their brain for them to remember not only now, but the 1960s where they are at the end of issue 25, because they're fighting one of my favorite serial killers, the Zodiac Killer. Mm-hmm. Nice. And then jumping back into, like I said, the Lusitania right before World War One, or right the beginning of World War One. So they are going to be inundated with all these different aspects of their lives. Sometimes they have their powers, sometimes they don't. And I kind of explain why their powers manifest and why their powers disappear from time to time.
So we got some Hawkman shenanigans going on.
yeah. Depends on which origin, though, I guess.
But I won't need to do any like Crisis on Infinite Earths.
At all.
You don't need to hire Venditti to fix it for you.
Yeah. I won't have to do any 12-part miniseries to be able to explain
everything. To explain it all. That's awesome, man. Yeah, this is so cool that you're able to do a third season, and that the wrapping up season 2, issue 25 comes out the end of the month, right?
Oh yeah, yep.
Great.
And I'm super excited to see it. The way that I slowly introduce this fourth character, Megan, I think is very effective. I couldn't be prouder and happier of the way that it's turning out.
Awesome. Are you going to do anything special with the 25th issue, like an oversized or something?
Yeah. Issue 25 is an oversized issue, nine pages bigger than what it usually is. But I've also got some stuff in the back that I'm going to do to be able to show some of the process.
Awesome.
I'm working on getting that stuff all compiled right now. But to be able to do something a little bit different, a little bit special for the end of the season.
It's really cool. Yeah, and he's doing it all himself, everybody. Come on. This is not easy. So
fun, but not easy. Yeah, fun, but not easy.
And I know last time we talked about some one-shots that hadn't come out yet. And one that is out now I wanted to ask you about is Hawthorne the Clown, because, you know, the one-shots were ability for you to do all these other genres that you want to dabble in. So talk about that one.
Yeah, so Hawthorne is actually my editor came to me and said he had to actually walk away for a few minutes. So I have another editor, Ryan Crow, who does an amazing job. He's a great writer. He's a comedian. He does some really fun stuff. But my editor before that, Patrick Daniel, was doing almost from the beginning. I think issue 5 he started with me editing, and he had to walk away for personal reasons. And he came to me a couple months later and said, "Hey, I've got a story. Are you still doing those one shots? Can we do it together?" And I said, "Of course we can. You know, let's do it. What do you got?" And he said two words to me. He said, "Clowns and vampires." And I said,
"What could go wrong?
Let's do it. Why not? So he gave me the script and I loved it. It was dark and it was funny and it was different. And when I started giving him pages, he seemed to really like what I was putting out. And I think our one shots are black and white. So I think the black and white really, really helped to show the darkness and the grossness of it without taking it too far. But it was a fun story to be able to draw. And it was one of the first times that I had not had any hand in the story at all. I have another one shot called The Sock Hop Killer, which is kind of my homage to like 80s slasher flicks. And I called up a buddy of mine, Paul Dolsky, who does the Everything Horror podcast.
Okay.
And if you want to know anything about horror of any type, he's the guy to talk to. So I had this, I was running through the woods one day. I was trying to not be almost a 50-year-old man and try to keep in some kind of shape. And I was standing there and you get that feeling in the back of your neck. You know what I mean? That like feeling.
Yeah, right.
So I started looking around with the goosebumps on the back of my neck, and I'm like, oh, that's fun. So I was like, I need to do a slasher thing.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what could I do? What kind of character could I do that would be different, but still have that feeling of Freddy and Jason and Michael Myers and all those kind of guys. So I love the 1950s as a year, as an era. Mm-hmm. And I said, what would, you know, people would maybe expect the greaser with the leather coat and the, you know, that kind of stuff. So I flipped it and I said, how about a female who's walking around on a poodle skirt and she's got a cool mask on.
Yep.
And she's killing people. So I had the basic idea, but called up my buddy Paul Dilsky and said, hey, I've got this idea. What I want to take it to the next level. And you're the guy. Within 10 minutes, we had not just a plot for the one issue. We had enough to fill multiple issues. So we had to kind of condense down to be able to make the story 24 page. I believe it's 20. Actually, I think we went 25 pages on that one, but still had enough there to be able to get some second or third installments out. And people really liked it. And I think Paul is still working on, we're still talking about the second installment of the Sock Hop Killer. So it's really fun to be able to work with people, be able to kind of dive in my own brain and do something like, will aliens do my homework all by myself, but also branch out to people that I know and trust that are very, very talented to be able to work with. It's been super fun.
Cool.
And so you mentioned doing another Sock Hop Killer. Have you thought about any more one shots in the near future?
Yeah, I've always got ideas in my brain. There are two actually that I have pretty much written. It's just going to be a matter of getting them done. The actual focus when I'm done with season two of The Offspring over the summer is going to be my next 100 plus page graphic novel.
Okay, wow.
So I already have one with a great writer, Brian Menard, who we did together, The Loved Ones. Mm-hmm. Which was the story of, it's like a nurture nature story with the children of classic movie monsters. So there's the child of Dracula, the child of Frankenstein's monster, the child of a witch, the child of the Wolfman. And they are kidnapped essentially by a Van Helsing type monster hunter character. So it's the idea of, if these characters that are born to be the trope monster, you know, sucking blood and, you know, evil, quote unquote, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. If they're raised by somebody who sees those characters as intrinsically evil, how is that going to affect those characters' emotions and their philosophy on life and their how they approach their humanity and their monsterisms. And it was really fun to write and draw. So I wanted to do another 100 plus page graphic novel. And I wanted to do something like very sci-fi, star, you know, spaceships and going to planets and lots of stuff. And I wanted to really hone in on the tone, the concepts of kind of like immortality and how we are not immortal, but how we look at ourselves as trying to consistently be 18 years old, even when we're 50, 60, 70 years old, and how that's an unreasonable expectation to have as society, but we still do it to ourselves. So it is a sci-fi action adventure with some really fun, different kind of characters and aliens. But the story that grounds it is a story about a father who is dying, who is trying not to die, who is trying to continue to be able to not only cure himself, but to maybe still have a set a reset button. And his daughter is helping him do it, but has reservations. And it's the story of those two characters and how they deal with the choices that the father makes to be able to restart his life. And I'm super excited. It's called Latent Lightspeed. And I've put some stuff on. I've got a cover ready to go. I put some stuff on the interwebs, the social medias about it. But I'm waiting to have a little bit more to be able to kind of unveil what this is going to be. I can't wait. I'm super excited about it.
Awesome. That sounds really cool.
Yeah. I've got the whole thing written. The whole thing is plotted out. The whole thing. I've got some of it thumbnailed and storyboarded. It's just going to be a matter of me sitting down and starting to draw.
Cool.
Let me ask you. So I got volume one off of Amazon. Are you using their printing for these comics now?
Yes. I essentially exclusively print through Amazon. Even if I'm going to cons, I'll just order books from them. Right now, with what I'm doing and the size that I am, that system really works for me to be able to not have to print 1,000 books at once, or even 100 books at once, because I have so many books right now. it would be unrealistic for me to do that. So what I do is I focus on each trade of The Offspring that I have, 5 volumes. I have usually issues 1 through through 8 as individual copies, and then I'll have all of my one shots as individual copies when I go to cons and when I go to show off my actual physical books. And I figure that can be a good starting point for people who want to see more. Mm-hmm. And so far it has been. It's been pretty good, pretty successful when I go to cons.
How has the process of working through Amazon been for you as a creator? Like, are there any struggles that might deter people from using it?
Yeah, I would say the beginning, it's very much a learning process. Like anything like this, you know, it's at the beginning, formatting was, you know, kind of a hit and miss. Mm-hmm. Somebody else might, smarter than me, might do their first book and have it formatted and it's all done and it's great. But I had, you know, some issues with their formatting process. Now I can pencil scan it in, pencil ink it, scan it in, clean it up, color it, and have the whole book formatted. If once I have everything colored and lettered, and once have the whole book formatted in 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, it probably took me 3 hours to get it right.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But now I've got it done. So once everything's saved and it's all, the whole book is completed, the formatting takes no time. That's probably the least stressful part of the process now for me.
Great.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's convenient too, I guess. You can just have made to order, right? So
it is. Yeah. And with the amount of volume that I have of actual titles, going to a printer and having, if they have a minimum of 100 books that you could print, I could never do that.
Yeah.
Just monetarily wise, but even like the physical books, I can't store mm-hmm. 25 yeah. issues and plus the trades, plus my one shots, plus right. my 4 issue miniseries, plus my, so it's, so it really does work for me. Somebody else it might not work for them, but it works pretty well for me.
Plus, you're a family man, so you don't want to be yeah. shipping books all day. I mean, you yeah. could get the kids just to ship it. I mean, you could get a little factory thing going on there. Yeah. I'm just saying,
they help me out from time to time, and then they, yeah. they yell at me for the paper cuts, and I say, suck it up.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Wait till you get to the real world, kids. Then you'll see yes. a real paper cut.
This yeah. is not the hardest thing you'll do in your life.
It's conditioning.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. David, man, this is great. Always love talking to you. Yeah. And you're always putting books out, which is great, you know. So people listening and watching, you know, there's books out now and there's books still coming out for The Offspring and his one shots it's great stuff. And I know you can get everything's through your website, right? So where can people go to get all these books?
Yeah, go to correcthandedcomics.com, and on any social media, if you search Correct Handed Comics, I'll pop up. It'll be the blue hand, just like this guy right here. Nice. Sometimes I have it be purple because I try to mix it up a little bit.
Cool.
But it'll be that big left hand right there. And you can find links on social media and Twitter and Instagram and TikTok and Facebook and all that stuff. Yeah, and links to everything I've ever created is up there. Awesome. Ready to go.
Yeah, perfect. Correct handed, because this right handed supremacy must end.
It's got to end. It's got to end. It's got to no stop. More tying the arms of left handed kids down on their chairs and making yeah. them be right handed.
Exactly.
That's great.
I don't think that's been a thing for about 50 years, but
no. It's not. But still,
now I think the right handed kids are being forced to play sports left handed because it's an advantage.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they realized how superior we were, David.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, growing up playing sports, people would always get confused because I would do everything left-handed, but then I'd kick right-handed, or I'd, you know, whatever right-handed. But with a bat, I can do both sides. With a glove, I can do both sides because you just yeah. always had to, because people would hand you a glove and you're like,
right,
well,
and
I'm
you had to figure it
left-handed,
out.
And yeah. they would say tough.
Yeah, right.
Before I do the outro, playing baseball growing up, that was my favorite thing. Was like yeah. just. After the first pitch, let's just switch sides.
Yeah.
Just let's mess with his head a little bit.
Mix it yeah, up a right. little bit. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So everybody, the book is The Offspring. There's many more as well. But the formatting for it, I was looking through it earlier. It comes out really nice. The trades are good. So definitely check it out. As always, those links will be in the show notes below, so you can click on those, go to David's website, or go straight to the Amazon page where you can just buy stuff right then and there. So, David, thank you so much for being on the show today and all the other times you've been on the show and all the future times we're going to have you on the show. Awesome. We love chatting with you, man.
Love being on the show. Thank you guys again very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we're back.
We're back. you know, always happy to have David on with his book, The Offspring, correcthandedcomics.com, all that good stuff. So check him out.
Yeah, it's good quality dude. Comics right here, right?
Yeah,
quality
right there.
Comics.
That. Yeah. That looks like a thick comic, too. Nice.
Volume 1. What does this include? This includes comics. I don't know what. I think it's issue
that's 1 through 6. It has comics.
Yeah.
Speaking of comics, I guess we'll go to this awesome comic book news I want to talk about this week.
Yeah, well, I try to figure out what issues this includes. Yes, issues 1 through 6.
Nice. Yeah, so got some cool stuff from DC this week. Pretty awesome. Pretty awesome stuff.
Yeah, Mike's excited.
Yeah. DC has announced they're expanding their new Golden Age line. It's about friggin' time. With 3 new limited series, all which will be spearheaded by Geoff Johns. Obviously, he can't write all these because, you know, he's too busy. If they just let Geoff Johns control the Golden Age stuff, like oversee it and let other people write it, I'd be cool with that. And I think that's kind of what they're setting up right now.
Yeah, I get the feeling they're treating Golden Age as an event.
Yeah.
And Johns is like writing the event book, and he's got all these other people under him and be like, all right, like this is where these characters are. This is where I need them to end.
Yep.
And that's what these books are. That's how I got it, the feeling of.
Yeah. So the first one, Alan Scott, the Green Lantern, sold. I don't even know who the fuck's writing it or artist. I don't even need to know. I don't even need to know, but it's even, we got Tim Sheridan on the book and Cyan Torme. On the art, but Tim Sheridan, great fucking writer. Alan Scott, best Green Lantern, in my opinion. Fight me. The series will bring a new modern twist to Alan Scott's origin. Don't even give a shit. Don't even care what it's about. It's got Alan Scott. Don't care.
I'm down for some Alan Scott Green Lantern.
And that cover, oh my God, that cover is amazing, too.
Doesn't hold a candle to Jon Stewart, but we'll move on from that.
Oh, okay, yeah, Jon Stewart's pretty good. But no, the first, yeah.
I love Alan Scott. I like what they've done with Alan Scott. I get it. A lot of these characters are new origin stories, whatever.
Yeah.
I do understand that maybe we need to like upgrade the origin stories to some of these guys and gals.
Yeah.
So I'm down with doing it. I'm just happy that there's an Alan Scott book.
Yeah.
Like it could have been like Alan Scott, like, I don't even know. I'm going to say something I think is stupid. It's going to end up sounding awesome. It could be the stupidest plot line ever.
Yeah.
But it says Alan Scott Green Lantern, and I'm going to be there.
Green Lantern lawn service or some shit. Like, he's just he's literally mowing people's lawns.
It could be Alan Scott and his husband just, like, hanging out in the kitchen, just talking. And I'd be that like, would this be is awesome. Amazing.
That would be awesome. Anything, please, just give us Alan Scott. The next one, everybody, if you thought it couldn't get better, Jay Garrick, The Flash by Jeremy Artems, art by Diego Olorategui. The series will follow Jay Garrick as he reunites with his daughter Judy as they try to thwart an evil plan decades in the making. If you've been reading The Lost Children, Stargirl, we know that Judy is the one who's trapped in there. So pretty awesome. Love me some Jay Garrick. Easily my favorite Flash. Cannot wait for this.
This one I'll check out. I'm just not a big Flash guy. Not a big fan of people who run fast personally, but I'll check it out just because I'm just so excited for these golden. I just want to put my money down to say more Golden Age characters, please. So
yeah, please.
But I like that cover a lot.
It's a great
splash
cover.
Of colors in the background are great.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. So yeah, I'll be checking it out.
This one's pretty cool. I tweeted at Vin Didi about this. Chris actually texted me ahead of time to like prepare me for this awesome news. Wesley Dodds, The Sandman by Robert Vin Didi with art by Riley Rossmo. The series follows Wesley Dodds as he tries to create a new sleep gas to create a human weapon for warfare. Along the way, he discovers some gases with deadly consequences and his journals are stolen. He has to find them before something as terrible is created and will pull the USA into the... before something terrible is created that would pull the USA into a next world war. Yeah. So Wesley Dodds, if anybody knows, like, why isn't this the Sandman, like the TV show, there is a Golden Age hero, the Sandman, which is actually referenced in the Sandman show. No, I think that, yeah, they do talk about it and the book. So
yeah, 100% it's in the book. I can't remember.
Yeah.
If it's in the show.
I don't know if they
I don't think it's in the show. 'Cause I don't think they were allowed to use DC characters.
Oh, true. Yeah.
But yeah, in the book they mention him because that's where the Sandman gets his name from or something like that.
Yeah.
But anyways. Awesome.
Rob Venditti on a Golden Age book. Take my money.
I'm internally I love Bad Idea. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. Love, love, love Bad Idea. I'm so happy that Venditti's on books that aren't Bad Idea. It's just, he seems to have been like pushed to this corner where like very few of us are getting to read his stuff. And he's now got a Dark Horse book, now a DC book again.
Yep.
I'm just happy that more people are going to get his work. And for, I love Wesley. I love the Sandman.
Yeah.
The Sandman, the hero, is one of my favorite Golden Age heroes just because he has such a cool design.
Right.
It's just such a unique power set and what he does. I just love the character. So
yeah,
I am really, really excited for this one. This is by far my top out of the three is Wesley Dobbs to get him. Yeah. And it sounds like it takes place in between World War One and World War Two,
which would be really cool.
Which is a really cool era to explore with superheroes. So,
some more DC stuff. DC announced that Jim Lee has been promoted to president and CCO, with chief creative officer. His new duties put him in charge of creative efforts across all forms of media. So Jim Lee is still doing things.
Yeah, Jim Lee's in charge of stuff.
Yep.
Good for him. I don't have much more to add to other than good for him. I mean,
yeah,
he seems like the type that lets creatives do what creatives do. So I don't feel like he's going to, he might step in when he thinks somebody's really fucking up, but
yeah,
I don't think this is going to affect the movie side because he's probably sitting back going like, James Gunn knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure he's just going to be hiring the right people to get books put together. I mean, the news we just talked about, the Golden Age, I'm sure he had something to do with that. So
yeah,
right off the bat, like, okay, you're doing good.
Yep. Keep it up. Keep it up. Less Wildstorm, more Golden Age.
That's not going to happen because Jim Lee created Wildstorm. So
yeah, that's the joke. we'll always see some sort of Wildstorm being pushed on us.
Every 5 years, they'll try again.
Yep. Titan Comics announced that they'll be publishing the unpublished comics by Matt Groening, taking place in his new Netflix animated series, Disenchantment. These comics were originally planned to be published under Groening's publisher, Bapper Books, but never came out. And now we'll get released original graphic novels through Titan Comics. So that's cool. I actually never watched Disenchantment, so I should probably check it out.
Neither have I, which is weird because I love Futurama. I'm like, I'll watch The Simpsons. I really liked it at one point in my life, but the problem with The Simpsons is it's gone on too long, and it's like trying to find the ones that are good is really hard now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I should watch Disenchantment, but, you know, it's weird. He had Bapper books that he tried for a little bit, and then he had another, I can't remember what the other one was called, Bongo Comics?
Oh yeah, that sounds I think it sounds like that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, because somebody knew somebody that worked at Bongo Comics that did all the Groening stuff. So he's always had an interest in comics in some way, and it's interesting to see that this is happening, and that there's like enough to do multiple OGNs.
Yeah.
So apparently he just made a shitload of comics and just never published them.
Yeah. Which
you never really see, but yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. This is interesting. So we've been talking about Bad Idea Comics. They're back on Kickstarter with a new comic called Megalith. The comic's said to have been in development since 2018. It's being hyped as the biggest comic in over 20 years. Okay. The series is a kaiju story of massive proportions, and the sequel is already said to be in the works. It was created by writer Matt Kent, artist Louis LaRosa. Yeah, so you know Bad Idea's coming back. They're on Kickstarter. Yeah, they're at almost $300,000 out of 10,000 goal, so yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
Yep.
It's an expensive book too.
Yeah.
It's like a $120 book.
Yep.
I I said I love Bad Idea. I can't spend $120 on a fucking book. I just can't do it. It's going to be, I want to read this. I want to check it out. But if, are you on the page right now?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
So the header says, help us bring this to comic stores.
Right.
So my feeling is, I think they said that this is going to be released as like a 6-issue series in comic stores or something like that.
Yeah.
I'll get it that way.
I can't believe they have over 500 backers for $120 $120 hardcover. That's kind of crazy. Yeah, there's no digital option, so I'm completely out.
Yeah, Expedia Day doesn't do digital, remember?
Like, I'll either pay $130 for a hardcover or nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've been talking to guys behind the scenes with Bad Ideas. We're trying to get something together to get people on the show again, mm-hmm. but I'm just really curious about this book.
Yeah.
I kind of hope... So, behind the scenes talk again. They might be sending us stuff.
Yeah.
Which if they do, we'll disclose it when it happens, but I almost want to ask them if they could send me like this, just so I can see.
Yeah.
Can I see what this $120 fucking book is? Like,
yeah. Cause that's like, I mean, even the, like your, that's like a DC Absolute Edition. And I don't even think they're $125.
Yeah. And it's more morbid curiosity at this point. Like, I don't think the book could live up to the price tag.
Yeah.
But they obviously got people disagree with me there.
I think it's funny too, cause they say Berserker for Matt Kidd. I'm like, Matt Kidd did Mind Management. That was like one of the biggest hits at Image Comics.
Yeah, but Berserker is huge. I mean,
yeah, I guess you got Keanu Reeves involved. So
Keanu Reeves, yeah, and like they're doing another Berserker book.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I get
Hopefully, you get Matt on the show soon, and then we talk to him about Keanu. Yeah, that's interesting. They're not getting my money, not because I don't like Bad Idea, just because that's a lot of money.
I kind of think they missed the point of Kickstarter. I mean, they don't miss the point of Kickstarter. I think they're taking advantage a little bit of the point of Kickstarter.
Yeah, because now they're cutting out the middleman. There's no local comic stores involved in this.
Well, like I said, it says in the header, help us bring this to comic stores. So I think it's coming to comic stores.
Right.
I'm pretty sure they told media that it's going to be like issue by issue in comic stores, maybe not this big trade.
Right.
So that's where the specialty comes in. You get it as a trade. I just don't think any trade, like standard trade, is worth $120. Even hardcover, oversized. Like I have never plopped down the money for an Absolute person. Yeah. I know you have, but I never have, because I can't justify my head that much for a trade.
And I only bought mine on sale, guys.
Oh yeah, that's right. You bought it at a Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah, I got both of mine on sale, so I never would pay full price for one for sure. Yeah.
That being said, I have bought like omnibuses and omnibuys and stuff like that, but like that's a little different. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's crazy though that they had 500 backers for that one hardcover. It's like that people don't even care what the price. They might be speculating a little bit just because the thing that Bad Idea has built up. So that's interesting. All right, what did we read this week, Chris? Comic books. I did tweet about it. King Cryptid. I got my first volume 1-4 from Peter Cimetti. Great guy. He threw in some extras in there for me, some blank covers, some signed covers. Really cool story. You would love it if you haven't read King Cryptid, Chris.
I haven't. I wanted to check it out though. It sounded right like
Like. Yeah. So he's like a culmination of a bunch of different cryptids, almost like Mothman, but he helps people and guides cryptid monsters if they've lost their way. It's a really good, each issue is like a one shot. And then it's, there's like an overarching subplot with like the FBI, but it was really good. I loved it. Art's really cool. Really cheap books through Alterna. So,
was that a 4-issue series?
Yep. And then I think he's working on volume 2 now, another 4 issues. It came out as 4 issues, like through, Indiegogo. Batman 135, Zdarsky and Hawthorne, man.
Oof. I believe you mean Batman 900.
Batman 900, one of the best Batman issues I've read in a long time. Chip Zdarsky, holy shit, dude. I know when this started off, this whole storyline of Batman in the multiverse, we had definitely brought up the fact that we're like, Batman should just fly through the multiverse and show us all this fun stuff. And well, yeah, that's kind of what happened this issue.
Yeah, Chip listens to the show.
Yeah, he does. So like the plot line, I mean, who cares how we get there, but we get to the multiverse with Batman. The dude, the Red Hood that's trying to become the Joker, starts like blinking through the multiverse looking for Jokers. And so we get this amazing like cat and mouse chase of Batman going through all these different universes to try to find the Red Hood before he like, you know, finds a Joker to assimilate with or whatever. And he starts needing help on the way.
And I know that's your favorite page.
Oh, hell yeah. He stops in the Keatonverse. And so you get Michael Keaton Batman. He stops in the... But he gets specific things for everybody. He stops in Batman Beyond, and he gets like his tech fixed up by Bruce Wayne. He stops in the Dark Knight Returns, where he like actually like fixes him up and gives him a new suit. So then we have Batman in the Dark Knight Returns suit, because Chip knows that's everybody's favorite suit.
Yes. Dude, animated series here.
Animated series.
Arkham.
Arkham. We get the Batman Beyond. He gets even a glimpse of the Kingdom Come, Bruce Wayne. And then he goes to the 60s Batman. We all talk about how the 66, that's why I really think he listens to the podcast. Amazing. Adam West gives him the overpowered utility belt. And we all know that it contains
the greatest bat thing ever.
Shark repellent
spray.
And it gets used.
Canon.
Shark repellent spray is canon. You have Batman in a friggin' Dark Knight Returns outfit using it on the space shark. And then at the end, we see like this amazing splash page of all the... We know that the Zur-En-Arr Batman lives in the head of Batman. So then we get a splash page of all the multiverse of Batman with the Zur-En-Arr costumes. Holy shit, what a phenomenal ride. Chip Zdarsky, man, you just, like, I had a tweet about it. It was so much fun to read. My God.
It's as if those last few pages were made for me.
Yeah.
Like you said, he's in the Dark Knight costume.
Right.
Fighting space sharks with shark repellent spray.
From the 60s Batman. Like, he's got the costume of Dark Knight Returns with the belt from 60s Batman, and with a device that he traveled back through the multiverse from Batman Beyond. You don't get much better than that.
it's unreal that this happened. Like when I'm reading it, because everybody's just like, you got to read it. You got to go home and read it.
Yeah.
And then as I'm reading it, I'm like, this can't live up to the hype of everybody. And I get to that moment. I'm like, that's why.
Yeah.
Because this book was written for me.
Yep.
And when all the Zur-En-Arrs are sitting there and he just goes, time to fight some crime. I was like, oh.
Yeah, you're like, oh yeah,
yeah, let's go fight some crime, damn it.
Yeah, it is Zdarsky. Yeah, it is. great issue. Shazam number one. Did you check this out by Mark Waid?
Of course I did.
Love the art. I thought it was a good first story. And also we get another 60s Batman reference. So two in 1 week is amazing. Billy's watching some 60s Batman to learn how to be a superhero the best way. I thought it was a great first issue. Billy's still trying to figure out how his new twist on his powers. They reference Lazarus, and I'm just like, whatever, I don't care. Still trying to figure out how to share his powers. He has his own like podcast, which is funny, where he talks about like Shazam. And then there's this like deity or other wizard that's in the realm where he occupies, that the wizard used to occupy, who thinks that he's not using his powers, like he's using them. He should be a lot more cruel or mean, like have an iron fist with humans and stop helping them so much. So at the end of the issue, he gets like possessed and calls them like swine or like, you know, awful people. And that's kind of where it leaves off.
Yeah, I thought it was a great intro if you've never read a Shazam book before.
Yeah.
Without doing the whole origin. I mean, it does do the origin, but without like really like we're going to sit through exactly what happened. And the only thing, the ending was a little weird, but I have faith in what Mark Waid's going to do with it. So
yeah.
I was just really happy to be reading a Billy Batson Shazam book.
Yeah, Dan Mora's art, man. Superb.
Yeah.
Yep. Vanish number six. That was all right. I don't know. Like you said, it's a little more of a a glimpse into like Donny Cates' struggles with his marriage and everything he's going through more than it was about magic at that point, which is fine for him. I'm glad he's, you know, getting through that. But to me, I would have liked a little more magic stuff going on. But I get it. He's got to make these characters a little more grounded.
It's one of the things that I love about Donnie. It's one of the reasons I loved like Kev Smith for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
Was like Donnie writes Donnie.
Yeah.
You know, and like Kevin Smith wrote Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
So I was more forgiving of it, but yeah, like that's exactly what that issue is about.
Mm-hmm. Radiant Black 24, man, they really just throw more and more comic book sci-fi science at you. This issue was okay. We figure out by the end of it that one of them has to choose who's going to be Radiant Black. So the two friends need to decide. They know there's something awful coming. They can't split the powers, which is kind of interesting. So that's, I'd like to see where that's going to go. Maybe that'll propel us into like a new era for Radiant Black where we get a little more stability on like what the hell's going on. And because we really haven't seen any depth into like, yeah, this big power is coming. You have the power. But like, where does all this come from? You know,
yeah, I have the power indeed.
Green Arrow number one, I didn't get to read yet, but I was really excited to read that this week because that's Josh Williamson. John Kent number three. This is Superman. What is it called? Something Superman.
Adventures of Superman.
John Kent. So we left off in the Injustice universe. We get to play around a little bit in there this issue. And then by the end of the issue, like, you know, John Kent, Superboy, I'm going to call him, has enough like insight to go around and explore Earth on his own. And the creepy part is this is pretty like unsettling. Was that like he's like, I don't hear anything. And like somebody's baby's crying and like the like he saves the baby and she's like very. And the scary part was she said it was an accident. I think she was trying to kill her child because like she didn't want her to live in a. Like, it was pretty dark. Like, she didn't want her baby to live in a world with this, like, Nazi overlord Superman. And, like, it's really tense because, like, John has that realization. He's like, I don't hear anybody or anything. Nobody's making a sound. And then Superman shows up and is like, hey, so what do you think? really good stuff so far, man. I'm really enjoying this book.
Yeah, and I forget the artist's name, but he does a really great job of portraying throughout the book, like especially at the end there, where I almost got the feeling that John was thinking at one point, like, should I have like let Ultraman take care of the Superman?
Yeah, you know? Right. Yeah, yeah.
And it was really well done, like how the whole book came about. I love this issue. Yeah, this series. I'll remind everybody. John Kent hater, or at least adult John Kent hater, yeah, right here. Same, and I think this book is phenomenal.
Yeah.
So
same. Yep. That's all I got to. I think I missed out on Saga and stuff this week.
I think Saga's next week.
Is it next week? Okay. Yes. Good.
Real quick from last week, Daredevil number 10 came out and was really good. And Hulk number 14 was the final issue with Otley.
Oh, okay.
And I like the way they ended it. He did a really clean ending. So those were two really good issues. Some quick things that came in the mail. My nice. CGC copy of Granite State Punk signed by the entire team.
That's so cool, man.
9.8 came in. So this is my new prize possession. Next to the original page from this said book. A couple of Kickstarters came in. So I got Frankenstein the Conquered. Issue 1 and 2. We talked to Dalton Shan about this book.
Yep.
Really love this book. It's everything Dalton said. Like, if you're like me, you like Conan and Barbarian stuff. Mm-hmm. It's that with like a supernatural twist. There's even like a twist in issue 2 where he has to fight a werewolf. And he does something to try to keep a piece of that werewolf with him at all times. So, I love this book. I'm excited to get more from these guys from this series. So well worth picking up. And then my stuff from Richard Fairgray showed up. I started reading Octopus. I'll say the design's really great. I love the stories I've read so far, but I'm not done with it. So I'm going to wait till next week to really talk in depth about it. But I did get his horror shorts issue 1 with it.
Oh, nice.
That's and I really enjoyed these. I think he led off with the strongest one with the corn cob story.
Yeah, I love that one.
Yeah, but the other ones are pretty good as well. And he labels it as issue one. So I'm hoping maybe next time we talk to him, I'll ask him. But I'm hoping he does more of these.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I talked about this book in the past, but the Scout Comics version came out, so I wanted to shout it out. Grim Space Pinocchio came out. Yeah. So I picked up the Scout Comics version.
Nice.
And then I got Groot number one, which is the origin story for Groot about what happened to his planet and everything and how it connects to Captain Marvel, the original Captain Marvel, Marvel. And basically there's this like space pirate group that's going around destroying these planets. And the Captain Marvel, when he was Recruit Marvel, finds Groot and a couple other of his people and saves them and then tries to bring them back to their home planet. Well, I should say, while trying to save them, they have to fight Chainosaurs, which are robotic dinosaurs with chainsaws.
That's awesome.
I'm just saying. Amazing. And then they go back to their planet, known as Planet X, and find out that these space pirates have been there and done something to the planet as well, but something different because the planet's not completely destroyed. And that's where we leave off issue one. So, like that.
Cool.
And I got Moon Knight number 23. And this issue of Moon Knight, Dylan Brock Venom has to team up with him to stop these like mercenaries. And they end up finding out that along the way that something that's been hindering Dylan's abilities is also something that Moon Knight's been following. So they team up to fight. And they get the villain technically, but the villain turns himself in so he doesn't have to be interrogated by Moon Knight because he's so afraid of Moon Knight, mm-hmm. which pisses Moon Knight off because he needed to interrogate him to get information about the next guy up the ladder. So really enjoying Jeb McKay's Moon Knight. Well, Mike, that is everything I read this week. Where could people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Fortress Ricker on Twitter. Where can they find you and or the show?
You can find me at Fortress Chris on pretty much all social medias or the show at Fortress Comics_ on pretty much all social medias. Also at fortressofcomicnews.com. Remember everybody to give us the reviews on the podcatchers. Like, subscribe, share, and comment down below on the YouTube version. And if you want to go the extra mile, Patreon at patreon.com/fortresscomics. Thank you all so much for watching and listening this week. And we will see you all here next week.